Thank you, Anthony, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's really great for us to be back in Adelaide. I think it was 3 years ago that we're here, so it's great to be here again today. Our Treasurer, the Honourable Rob Lucas, and Opposition Leader Peter Malanakis, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Reserve Bank Board, I'd like to warmly thank you for joining us tonight, this community dinner. These dinners are an opportunity for you to hear directly from the Reserve Bank and the board members, and for us to hear directly from you about how things are going here in Adelaide and South Australia. So welcome, thank you for joining us tonight, and I hope you enjoy the evening. I'd like to begin by paying a tribute to Catherine Fagg, who's sitting just here. Catherine's five-year term on the Reserve Bank Board comes to an end next week, so Catherine attended her last meeting today. Over those five years, Catherine has made an outstanding contribution to the Board's deliberations, drawing on her extensive experience across a whole range of areas of the Australian economy. Catherine has also served as Chair of the Board Audit Committee, and she's been the Board's representative on the Board of Note Printing Australia. She's carried out these jobs not only to the highest professional standards, but also with the greatest humanity. Catherine, you're going to be missed greatly by your friends and by your admirers at the Reserve Bank. Thank you very much for your service to our great country. As you are probably aware by now, at our meeting today, the board kept the cash rate unchanged at 1.5%. It's been at this level since August 2016. That's 21 months in a row now. That's the longest period without a change. I sometimes read in the press that the board's job has become very easy. We just meet and we do nothing. No doubt the board members here tonight will tell you a different story. They will assure you that at each of our meetings, we diligently assess the pulse of the Australian economy. We also deliberate very carefully over what setting of monetary policy will best contribute to delivering low and stable inflation in Australia. As we conduct those deliberations, we are conscious that our ultimate objective is enhancing the economic prosperity and welfare of the Australian people. This objective has been part of the Reserve Bank Act since it was written way back in 1959. Such a broad objective became quite unfashionable in central banking circles over recent decades. Our Act was considered old-fashioned. But in my view, this focus on the prosperity of the Australian people is an important part of our policy framework, and it stood the test of time. I'm very glad that we still have that in our mandate. At today's meeting, when we measured the pulse of the Australian economy, we assessed it to be stronger than it was a year ago. Business conditions are around the highest level that they've been for many years, and the long-awaited pickup in non-mining business investment is now taking place. There's also been a pickup in infrastructure spending in many states. The number of Australians with jobs has grown strongly over the past year, and the unemployment rate is lower than it was a year ago, although there hasn't been very much change for the past 6 months. Growth in consumer spending has also been solid, although it's lower than it was before the financial crisis. Here in South Australia, we also heard at our meeting today how the pulse has quickened over the past year. And this follows a number of years of difficult structural adjustment after the closure of the car industry. But over the past year, final domestic demand in South Australia has increased by 5%, which is a very positive outcome. And as we've seen nationally, there's been a pickup in business confidence and business conditions and investment here in South Australia. There are positive signs in a number of areas, including tourism, high-value food and beverage production, and some parts of advanced engineering and manufacturing. So things are getting better here in South Australia as they are across the country. helping both here and elsewhere in Australia is the positive outcomes in the international front. Investment has picked up around the world, and international trade is stronger than it has been for some time. And as a group, the advanced economies are growing faster than trend, and unemployment rates across the advanced economies are now very low. The Chinese economy is continuing to grow strongly, although at a slower rate than in the past. So at the moment, the international backdrop that we face is quite a positive one. At our meeting today, we also discussed the latest inflation data, which showed both CPI and underlying inflation running just marginally below 2%. This was in line with our expectations, and it provides further confirmation that inflation has troughed in Australia, although it remains quite low. Strong competition in the retail industry is holding down the prices of many goods. For example, over the past year, the price of food in Australia increased by just 0.5%. That's quite a low increase. The price of clothing and footwear actually fell 3.5%, and the price of household appliances fell 2.5%. So we're seeing price declines across a whole range of goods, and the price of food is rising at a very slow rate. Importantly, these outcomes are helping to offset some of the cost of living pressures arising from higher electricity prices, which last year were up 12% nationally. It's a big increase. Another factor influencing the recent inflation outcomes is subdued growth in wages. Increases in wages of around 2% seem to have become the norm in Australia, rather than the 3 to 4% wage increases which were the norm a while back. And this is an issue that we've been discussing a lot around our board table over recent times. While low growth in wages is undoubtedly helping boost employment, it's also put the finances of some households under strain, especially those who borrowed on the basis that their incomes would continue growing at the old rate. And in terms of the inflation target, it is difficult to see how a continuation of 2% growth in wages is compatible with us achieving the midpoint of our inflation target, that's 2.5% on a sustained basis. So from that perspective alone, a pickup in wage growth over time would be a welcome development. But perhaps more importantly, sustained low wage growth diminishes the sense of shared prosperity that we have in Australia, and I think that's a problem from many dimensions. In our liaison with business, including businesses here in Adelaide, many tell us about the very competitive environment that they're operating under. They tell us how this competitive environment means it's very difficult to increase wages. At the same time, though, we are hearing a few more reports of larger increases in wages in those parts of the economy where there are shortages of workers, and we're hearing more and more stories of shortages of workers. After all, the laws of supply and demand still work. We haven't given up on that. We also see kind of evidence in the aggregate data that wage growth has troughed, and we expect it to lift. But that lift is likely to be only gradual, and that means the lift in inflation is likely to be only gradual. At today's board meeting, the board reviewed the staff's latest forecast for the economy. These will be published on Friday in our quarterly statement of monetary policy. For those of you who are close readers of that document, you'll notice some changes in this issue as we try to make it more thematic. But the latest forecast should not contain any surprises, with only very small changes from the previous set of forecasts that we issued 3 months ago. This year and next, our central scenario is for the Australian economy to grow a bit faster than 3%. And this would be a better outcome than we've seen over recent times. If we're able to achieve this, then we will make further progress in reducing spare capacity in the economy, and we should see another further modest reduction in the unemployment rate, which would be very good news. Inflation is expected to remain low at around its current level for a while before gradually increasing over the next couple of years back to 2.5%. A key element in this forecast is a pickup in wage growth that I just mentioned. So in summary, there has been progress in lowering unemployment and having inflation return to around the midpoint of the target range, and we expect further progress in these two areas over the next couple of years. The other key point is that the progress we are making is only gradual. Our central scenario is for a gradual pickup in wages growth, a gradual lift in inflation, and a gradual reduction in the unemployment rate. So there's improvement occurring, but it's only gradual. While we might like and hope for faster progress, it is encouraging that things are moving in the right direction and they're likely to continue to do so. And I think we should all take a positive sense from that. If this is how things do turn out, it's reasonable to expect that the next move in interest rates will be up and not down. And this would reflect conditions in the economy returning to normal. In our discussions today, though, the board again agreed that there was not a strong case for a near-term adjustment in interest rates. And this reflects our view that the progress in moving towards full employment and back to the midpoint of our inflation target is likely to be only gradual. The board's view is that while this progress is occurring, the best contribution that we can make to the welfare of the Australian people is to hold the cash rate steady and for the Reserve Bank to be a source of confidence and stability. So that's where we are at the moment. At our meeting, we also discussed some of the risks around this generally positive outlook. And these lie largely in the international area. One of the prominent risks is the possible escalation of protectionist measures in the United States and elsewhere. Here, the very clear lesson from history is that this would be bad for global growth and it would be bad for Australia. As a country that has prospered greatly from openness, Australia has a lot resting on this not happening. We also have a lot resting on the Chinese authorities successfully managing the very significant build-up of debt in their economy. Over recent times, they've paid increasing attention to this issue, which is a good thing. And given the importance of this issue, at our board meeting today, we had an in-depth discussion of risks in the Chinese financial system. Domestically, for some time, we've seen the main risk be related to household balance sheets. For a while, trends in household credit were quite concerning. On this front, though, things do look less worrying than they were a while back. Although the level of household debt remains very high in Australia, which does carry certain risks. In terms of financing, we also discussed the potential for some tightening in financial conditions in Australia over the next little while. In the United States, the cost of US dollar funding has increased for reasons not directly related to monetary policy there, and this increase is now flowing through into higher money market rates in Australia. We do expect some of this to be reversed in time, although it's difficult to tell by how much and when. It's also possible that lending standards in Australia will be tightened further in the context of the current high level of public scrutiny on the banking industry. So we're going to continue to watch these issues very carefully. So these are the issues that we worked through at our meeting today. I do hope they give you the sense that even if we have not changed interest rates for 21 months, we have a lot on our plate. We certainly feel we do. Before I finish, I'd like to say a few words about some of the Reserve Bank's other activities. You'd be aware that the Reserve Bank issues Australia's banknotes. We are currently undertaking a major exercise to issue a new high-tech series to make sure that we stay ahead of the counterfeiters. We've already issued new $5 notes, a new $5 note, new $10 note, and a new $50 note will be issued later this year. It's a very big logistical exercise for us. And that's because all up, there are more than 700 million individual $50 notes on issue in Australia. That averages around 30 per person. It's quite a lot. Not all these are in active circulation. I suspect not many people here have 30 in their wallets or purses tonight. I don't know. Many of these $50 notes are still located in ATMs and some are used as a store of value, perhaps under mattresses in the bottom of cupboards. Not sure. But the $50 note is of special significance to South Australia. And I say this because on one side of the note, it has the portrait of David Unaipin, a great Australian. David Yunaipan was a Narangeri man born at Port Macleay in the Coorong region, and he lived most of his life here in South Australia. He was a great pioneer in so many ways, and he pushed back against the injustice experienced by the Aboriginal people. David Yunaipan was also Australia's first published author, writing about, in his own words, Aboriginal customs, beliefs, and imaginings. He was a tireless advocate for Aboriginal people, and he wrote and spoke very eloquently about how to make things better. And in what spare time he had, he worked on various inventions, right up until his 90s, so much so that he earned a reputation as Australia's Leonardo da Vinci. So we're incredibly proud to have a great South Australian, David Yunaipan, on our $50 banknote, and we're equally proud to have Edith Cowan on the other side of the note, who was the first female member of an Australian Parliament. So I think the $50 note is something we should be proud of, not only because of the great technology it has, but because of the great Australians that it has on it. The first $50 note, that was the paper one, was introduced into circulation 45 years ago, back in 1973. In today's money, it was worth almost $500 at the time. That's 10 times what it's worth today. Reading back through our archives, the main argument for introducing such a high-value banknote was that it would help people conveniently pay for large household purchases, like cars and white goods and perhaps going on holidays. It's kind of yet another sign of kind of how much our world has changed. Today, most of us don't need large value banknotes to make these type of payments. It would be inappropriate to do so. Many of us make the bulk of our large payments and indeed our small payments electronically. And this is one reason why today the highest value banknote, the $100 note, is worth only a fifth of what the $50 note was worth when we introduced it back in 1973. The shift to electronic payments is being helped by another project the Reserve Bank has been very closely involved in, and that's the new payments platform. I hope you've heard of it. The bank played an important policy role in getting this new system off the ground, and it's built a very important piece of the infrastructure that allows that system to operate. This new payment platform allows near instantaneous payments to be made between bank accounts. Ultimately, it will provide the rails for new payment solutions, which will be a great advantage to both consumers and to businesses. But its first service allows people to make payments to one another that are received no matter who you bank with in only a few seconds, and all you need to know is someone's mobile phone number or email account. You'll soon be able to forget the complicated BSBs, and with the payment instructions, you'll be able to send complicated messages, not just limited to 14 or 18 characters, as many banks currently are. I hope that many of you have registered your PayID, which makes it easy for this new system to operate. So far, almost 1.4 million Australians have done exactly this, and they're now able to make efficient, low-cost payments with lots of information on a 24/7 basis. If you've not already done so, I encourage you to look into this system and to register your PayID as soon as your bank offers the service. But that's as close as I'm allowed to get to giving you financial advice. I might get into trouble otherwise. So that's as close as I'm allowed to get. So I really do think it's time for dinner. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you enjoy the evening. Thank you.